ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
Today we're reading from the glorious Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, isn't supposed to, is it 16th or 17th chapter? Okay. 16th chapter entitled How Parikshit Received the Age of Kali, verses 19, 20 and 21. So it'll be, that's a very long book. Padair, please repeat after me, okay? Padair,
Nunam,
Sochasi,
Maika,
Padam,
Atmanam,
Va,
Rishale,
Bokshamanam,
Atmanam
vai vrishaler bhokshamanam
Aho
suradin
Rita
Nyagnya
Bhagan
Aho suradin Rita Yagna Bhagan
Raja
Uta
Srin
Maghavati
Avarshati
Pragya Uta Srin Maghavati Avarshati. Padayar Padar Nyunam Sochatir Makai Padam Atmanam vaigrishaver bhokshyamanam Aho suradin hrita yajna bhagan Praja utasvim magavati avarshati Adarnyunam sochati maha Maika Padam Atmanam Vaibhrishaver Bhokshyamanam Aho Suradin Vita Jnana Bhagan Praja Udasvim Bhagavati Avarshati.
Oh.
Others? By the way, anybody turn off their cell phones? Can the ringers off your cell phones, please? Now, since it's three verses, I read all three verses. What's the format? Where is Varda?
Varda, can you please come here?
Okay, I'll just okay, that's what
I asked, what I wanted to know.
I just read those other verses and then this one. Okay, so well, please repeat after me. Padahai, by three legs. Nyunam, diminished. So Jishi, if you are lamenting for that,
Ma, mine.
Ekapadam, only one leg. Atmanam, own body. Va,
four.
Vrishalai, by the unlawful meat eaters. Bokshamanam, to be exploited. Aho, in sacrifice. Sura Adin, the authorized demigod. Hrityagnya, devoid of sacrificial. Bhagan, share. Rajaha, the living beings. Uta, increasing. Svit, weather. Magavati, in famine and scarcity. Avarshiti, because of rainlessness.
So I'll just read a translation from the. I can just read the translation from the previous verse. That's the format? Okay.
So I'll read the translation of the previous verse, 19. Then I'll read the and a purport to that one, then the translation of 20, and a word for word, and then the next verse. The translation of the previous verse, Dharma, in the form of a bull, It's supposed to be chapter 17, not chapter 16. That's the message. I supposed to be
Canto 1, chapter 17, not chapter 16.
Yeah, not 16.
Yeah, one chapter wrong. There's something that's wrong with this.
Yeah.
It's the wrong chapter.
Yeah.
19. Yeah, I think something extremely wrong with that.
Continue what you did yesterday.
It's supposed to be 19, 20, and.
You have done this.
Huh?
You have done this. You have done all. You go all ahead. I think it's 35.
Yeah. No. I'm just going to do what I was told.
Yeah.
Which is right here. See?
1, 17, 19, 20, 21.
Yeah. Stick to the schedule.
Yeah.
Okay, sorry for that. There was a little confusion. Amazing how much trouble with this one number is changed. That's very hot. So that means the verse that we just chanted was completely. I mean, it's always good to chant Sanskrit mantras. Srila Prabhupada said that just by hearing it, even if you don't understand Sanskrit, we still get the benefit. So the previous verse is the first canto, chapter 17, which is the punishment and reward of Kali. Yes, this is completely different. So the translation is, some of the philosophers who deny all sorts of duality declare that one's own self is responsible for his personal happiness and distress. Others say that superhuman powers are responsible, while yet others say that activity is responsible, and the gross materialists maintain that nature is the ultimate cause. Report. As referred to above, philosophers like Jaimini and his followers established that fruitive activity is the root cause of all distress and happiness, and even if there is a superior authority, some superhuman powerful god or gods, he or they are all under the influence of fruitive activity because they reward results according to one's action. They say that action is not independent because action is performed by some performer. Therefore, the performer himself is the cause of his own happiness or distress. In Bhagavad Gita 6.5, also it is confirmed that by one's mind, freed from material affection, one can deliver himself from the sufferings of material pangs. So one should not entangle oneself in matter by the mind's material affections. Thus one's own mind is one's friend or enemy in one's material happiness and distress. Atheistic, materialistic Sankhyites conclude that material nature is the cause of all causes. According to them, combinations of material elements are the causes of material happiness and distress, and disintegration of matter is the cause of freedom from all material pangs. Gautama and Kanada find that atomic combination is the cause of everything, and in personalists like Ashtavakra discover that the spiritual effulgence of Brahman is the cause of all causes. But in the Bhagavad Gita, the Lord Himself declares that He is the source of the impersonal Brahman, and therefore He, the personality of Godhead, is the ultimate cause of all causes. It's also confirmed in the Brahma Samhita that Lord Krishna is the ultimate cause of all causes. Verse 20. There are also some thinkers who believe that no one can ascertain the cause of distress by argumentation, nor know it by imagination, nor express it by words. O sage among kings, judge for yourself by thinking over all this with your own intelligence. The Vaishnavites, the devotees of the Lord, do believe, as above explained, that nothing can take place without the sanction of the Supreme Lord. He is the Supreme Director, for He confirms in the Bhagavad Gita 15.15 that He is the all-pervading Paramatma, stays in everyone's heart and keeps vigilance over all actions and witnesses all activities. The argument of the atheist that one cannot be punished for one's misdeeds unless proved before qualified justice is refuted herein. For we accept the perpetual witness and constant companion of the living being. A living being may forget all that he might have done in his past or present life, but one must know that in the same tree of the material body, the individual soul and the supreme soul, or as Paramatma, are sitting like two birds. One of them, the living being, is enjoying the fruits of the tree, whereas the supreme being is there to witness the activities. Therefore, the Paramatma feature, the supreme soul, is actually the witness of all activities of the living being. And only by his direction can the living being remember or forget what he might have done in the past. He is therefore both the all-pervading impersonal Brahman and the localized Paramatma in everyone's heart. He is the knower of all past, present, and future. Nothing can be concealed from him. The devotees know this truth and therefore they discharge their duties sincerely without being overly anxious for rewards. Besides that, one cannot estimate the Lord's reactions either by speculation or by scholarship. Why does he put some into difficulty and not others? He is the supreme knower of the Vedic knowledge, and thus he is the factual Vedantist. At the same time, he is the compiler of the Vedanta. No one is independent of him, and everyone is engaged in his service in different ways. In the conditioned state, such services are rendered by the living being under force of the material nature, whereas in the liberated state, the living being is helped by the spiritual nature in voluntary loving service of the Lord. There is no incongruity or inebriety in his actions. All are on the path of absolute truth. Bhishmadev correctly estimated the inconceivable actions of the Lord. The conclusion is, therefore, that the sufferings of the representatives of religion and the representative of the earth as present before Maharaj Parikshit were planned to prove that Maharaj Parikshit was the ideal executive head because he knew well how to give protection to the cows, the earth, and the brahmanas, religious principle, the two pillars of spiritual advancement. Everyone is under the full control of the Lord. He is quite correct in his action when he desires something to be done by someone, irrespective of the consideration of the particular case. Maharaj Parikshit was thus put to test for his greatness. Now let us see how he solves it by his sagacious mind. Verse 21. Sutta Goswami said, "O best among the brahmanas, the emperor Parikshit, thus hearing the personality of religion speak, was fully satisfied, and without mistake or regret, he gave his reply." Purport. The statement of the bull, the personality of religion, was full of philosophy and knowledge, and the king was satisfied, since he could understand the suffering bull was not an ordinary one. Unless one is perfectly conversant with the law of the Supreme Lord, one cannot speak such things touching philosophical truths. The emperor, being also on the equal level of sagacity, replied to the point without doubts or mistakes.
I was born in the darkest of ignorance, but my spiritual master opened my eyes with foresight of knowledge. I offer my respectful obeisances unto him. Phone rings, they will have to donate 1,000 rupees for book distribution before they can leave the temple. So, when I was living in San Diego, in the BI, there was one Indian devotee, and I mean Indian, I mean Red Indian. He was from the Lakota tribe of the Sioux Nation. And he was a bhakta there. And he told us that when he was born, the tribal elders, they said that he would become a great medicine man. Medicine man is like a, I guess you could say, a guru in, amongst the Latoka, the Sioux Indians, very famous warrior tribe of the northern plains. So he came to us and he told us in regards to this section of the Bhagavatam that there is exactly the same tradition in their oral heritage, the idea of the white buffalo spirit. And she meets a buffalo. Buffalo is found in the plains of North America, a big hump, not like a water buffalo here. So this, how in the same way that in each age the buffalo loses one leg, each leg of the devil cycles. So we were very fascinated with this, because you know, the BI, we were doing all kinds of research in this way. So Sariputta did some research into it, and he included it in his book here, The Mysteries of the Sacred Universe. And then he did some research, and he found that this is actually seems to be widespread throughout the world. So according to the Puranas, the bull of Dharma, or religious principles, begins with the four legs in Tripta Yuga. See Bhagavatam verse, that's what we're in right now, 117, 24, 25. In each successive yuga, the bull loses one leg and virtue decreases until finally it totters on one leg in Kali Yuga and corruption becomes rampant. A striking parallel to this story is told by the Sioux Indians of North America, who also have a cyclic chronology of four ages. The anthropologist Joseph Epes Brown writes, according to Sioux mythology, of course everything is just within mythology, which is a way of denying the fact by saying it's mythology, it is believed that at the beginning of the cycle, a buffalo was placed on at the west in order to hold back the waters. Every year this buffalo loses one hair, and every age he loses one leg. When all his hair and all four legs are gone, then the waters rush in once again, and the cycle comes to an end. It sounds familiar, like the devastation of Pralaya, the waters of the Pralaya. It is believed by both the American Indian and the Hindu that at the present time the buffalo or bull is on his last leg, and he is very nearly bald. Corresponding beliefs could be cited from many other traditions. So it's not just, it shows the, it's a hint indicating the widespread, from a widespread of the Vedic culture throughout the world. That it's not just something in the Bhagavatam or in India, but in the middle of North America, you know, thousands of years ago, this is because they hunted, they depended upon the buffalo for their sustenance. And, of course, they would kill them and eat them, but they were much more, you could say, respected. They would ask forgiveness. First, they asked permission to kill them, and they'd beg for forgiveness. After they only ate, they killed for sustenance, unlike the hunters who would just go for sport and slaughter as many as they could. I was just reading a couple of days ago about King George V, how one day in 6 hours of shooting he killed 1,000 pheasants. He loved to kill, and even he claimed that that was a little bit over, a little bit much. When he came to India, one of the only English king to come to India, he went tiger hunting, and he killed dozens of tigers, all kinds of other animals, loved, just for sport. So they didn't do it for sport. They did it because they had to live. And it's not exactly a very hospitable place for doing agriculture. Very severe weather conditions. So it was done in a reverential spirit. So another point is that in this section of the Bhagavatam, we see the importance of the Kshatriyas. Sometimes persons who are very eager to re-establish Varnashram Dharma, which is actually one of the major, Daivya Varnashram is one of the major goals that Srila Prabhupada and Bhaktisiddhanta had for us to do, to re-establish Varnashram Dharma. They emphasize that Varnashram Dharma will be established by you know, making villages, you know, becoming more agrarian based, protecting, you know, basing the cows, etc. But while that is true, the real way that Varnashram Dharma is maintained is explained in the third canto at the end of the 21st chapter, the conversation between Kardama Muni and Swayambhuva Manu. He clearly explains it's not by having cows or this or that. It is by the cooperation between the Brahmanas and the Kshatriyas. You can have as many cows as you want, but if somebody's sending them to the slaughterhouse, then what's the good? You have a nice village, but then somebody comes and raids your village and takes everything, takes your women, takes your cows. It's not going to be very, very valuable, is it? It's not going to be, you're just making targets for criminals. So it's by the interrelationship between the Brahmins and Kshatriyas. The Brahmins, of course, both Brahmins and Kshatriyas, and Vaishyas also, they all go to the Gurukul. They all are dvijas. They all study the Vedas. They all perform sacrifices. The difference being is that Brahmins are allowed to do sacrifices for other people, and they are allowed to teach other people. And while everybody can give charity, only Brahmins are allowed to accept charity. That's the only difference. So the Brahmins, they can guide the Kshatriyas, and the Kshatriyas appreciate them, and they enforce the Shastras. They enforce them. That's why as soon as Parikshit saw what was happening to this cow and bull, he immediately was going to execute them, execute Kali. And he was protecting Dharma. So it's very extremely important that this is that we have to cultivate the Kshatriyas. That of course we should. I heard that there's a scheme to donate 1,000 Gitas to people in jail, right? But I think we should give the Gitas to the people who are putting them in jail. That would be better. Instead of giving it, you should give the Gitas to the people who are putting them into the jail. To give it to the Kshatriyas, the police forces, the military. They're actually the protectors of the society. So they're the ones who are putting the people into jail, right? So they should be educated. They can be, it's more, I guess, you get better return on your investment. Of course, we should be merciful to people in jail, but we should have our priorities correct. It's there. So that's a suggestion I would have. We should try to cultivate people who have a natural tendency to protect. The police, the military. How many cantonments are there in Bangalore? How many there's there? So, I mean, when you go to southern Bangalore, they pass so many military bases, the sappers, the this, the Air Force, there's so many military personnel in Bangalore. There's police stations, everybody, they should all have. When I went to the FRO the first time, and I came with a bundle of books and just dropped it off in a police station. They should all have Gitas, and they should have at least one, each station should have at least a copy of the first canto. That would be a strategic investment, you can say. Who can, like as it says in this, right here, we don't know what could be the result. It says here, besides that, one cannot estimate the Lord's reactions. Either by speculation or by speculation, we don't know what would be the effect of doing that. You know, of giving it to the. I mean, I was. And they actually do read them. These people read these books. I mean, it was a couple of years ago. I was wondering, there was a policeman standing in our road, just standing there for a couple of hours, just like doing nothing. Never saw him before, never saw him again. Wondering what he was doing. So I went and asked him, what are you doing? Oh, some VIP is coming, you know, sometime, you know, I'm making sure, you know, blocking the traffic, etc., etc. And he began to explain to me how, well, I guess he was in the police academy or whatever, that he was feeling suicidal. But then he got a hold of Bhagavad Gita, somehow he got a hold of Bhagavad Gita, read it, and then he was, you know, he lost his desire to commit suicide. And began telling me about it. He was very appreciative of Srila Prabhupada, because Srila Prabhupada is finding it as it is. So people are reading these books. Police can read also. They are the natural allies. When Bhakti Siddhanta and the Gaudiya Mutt, unlike other organizations like, say, Aurobindo, who was a, you know, he had to leave, the reason he moved to, you know why he moved to Pondicherry, right? Because there was a noose waiting for him in Calcutta. Because he was a nationalist, preaching anti-British propaganda. So he had to escape to Pondicherry, which is ruled by the French. It was a safe haven for nationalists. So Bhakti Siddhanta, he didn't go against the British. When they asked him why, he says, the duty of the sadhu is to bless the kings and give them good advice. So he did, you know, that is the duty of the sadhus, to bless the kings and give them good advice. That was Bhakti Vinod Thakur did that. And they were so appreciative of that, that they actually gave him facilities in South India on the equal level that they did to the Christian churches. Because he recognized that the government is actually the ally of the sadhus, if you know what you're doing. That is actually, because between brahmanas and kshatriyas, they cooperate, then progress is made. Long as you don't have kshatriyas who are favorable to you, you're finished. Otherwise you're going to be like in a situation in Russia or in China, where everything has to be underground. So we could have the kshatriyas helping them, that we really make a lot of progress. I was talking to one retired DIG of police, who actually was a Sri Vaishnava, a highly learned Sanskrit scholar, but somehow or the other he became the Swamacharya family, and somehow he became a police officer. He, one time in the middle of the night, he saw herd of a 300 or 500 cows being, in the middle of the night, being brought into Bangalore to the direction of Moor Market. He immediately figured out what was going on, arrested everybody, impounded the cows, and he started, and what to do with all the cows. So all the cows were distributed in the bunks, all the different police stations of Bangalore, until they figured out what to do with them. And they established the first Goshala in Bangalore. This police officer, he established the first Goshala, because he protected them from all. They're all going to be slaughtered by the Muslims. The police did it. If you try to do that, you'd get in trouble. But because the police, they have the guns, you know, they can just do that. So these are our friends. So we should cultivate them. Why should we ignore them? We should actually cultivate them. And who knows what the result could be. We should not speculate. We should not try to limit. We cannot estimate how the Lord will act through these people. We don't know. He can do anything. And it's the duty of the king to tour the country. Not that they just sit in their comfort zone. The king would either tour, in this case, in his royal, with all his royal power, or sometimes they would also tour incognito. It's described in, actually Shakespeare describes in one scene in Henry V, how the king, at the verge of a very important battle, he was outnumbered. The British were very tired, only 5,000 men, no food, they'd been rained on for weeks, it was cold, and they were facing a fresh army of the French army, I think it was between 12 and 60,000 men, fresh. So he wanted to find out what was the mood of his men. You know, they're heavily outnumbered, tired, everything. Do they have the will to fight? So he went in disguise in the middle of the night and he talked to his soldiers just to see what was their mood, if they were ready to do the needful. And he inspired them. The next day he inspired them. And even though they were heavily outnumbered, at least 5 to 1, they slaughtered the French with only 100 casualties on their own side. Very famous battle of Agincourt. Because he did that. And also, then that's just not in the past. It's also, of course, there are not that many kings these days. But I was reading a few years ago, after the last king of Jordan, Hussein, died, he was very much loved by his subjects. He had been the king for like several decades. And he was a very humble man. That, remember, in 1997, yeah, there was a tragic incident at the some Israeli tourists, schoolgirls, came and they were near the Jordanian border, and one of the Jordanian border guards just fired at them and killed, you know, half a dozen or a dozen schoolgirls. You know, on the verge of an international incident. But what did the king of Jordan do? He went to each home of each of the parents and on his knees begged forgiveness. Because it was his guard who killed their children. On his knees he begged for forgiveness. Because he was also a parent. He knew the pain people have. So after he died, his son, who had also been trained in the military, what he does, I was reading in, I can't remember where, just to make sure that his servants, public servants, are doing the right thing, he goes in disguise. He put a wig on, dress as a, you know, common person. He even puts a pebble in his shoe, so he doesn't walk the same as he normally would, because he would limp or something. Right? And he goes to different, you know, like to the BSNL. He goes to different government agencies and see how the people are, how his servants are treating the citizens. And if he doesn't get treated well, then later that person gets fired, because he doesn't reveal himself at the time. But he would investigate, he'd check, make sure that things are being done right. Because if you go in all your royal finery, of course, everything will be done right. But if you come in disguise and you see what is the real situation of the people, and the whole of that's why said in the fourth canto that in the Prithu Maharaja's kingdom was run excellently, perfectly. Why? Because he had it fully infiltrated with a whole system of spy networks. He knew everything that was going on. There's no secret sinful activity could be carried on. No gambling, no cow slaughter and secret, no, nothing. Nothing, because he had an intricate network of spies. Because, as Chanakya explains, that the Brahmin, he sees with Shastra Chakshish. But the king, he sees with spies. And the cow, how does a cow see? With its nose. Cow sees through its nose. It's able to discern what is edible by its nose. Right? You try to give something to a cow first, the cow will smell it. He doesn't eat it first, he smells it first. Then, or she. Then they'll eat it. If it smells right, then they eat it. And an ordinary person sees with their eyes. So Parikshit, he's doing what king should do. As Chanakya says, that The king who goes on tour, they get glory. A Brahmin who goes on tour gets glory. But a woman who goes on tour gets destroyed. See, you know, so many bad things can happen to them. So going on tour, checking out what is going on, you know, is the proper thing to do. Unlike today, you know, the only time the government officials, they go on tour when it's election time, right? Then they do something stupid, like just look outside on the road. So I think it was in March of 2008 when I just came back from the hospital. So I noticed they just paved the road. Why do you think it's election time? They're paving the road, right? But they're so stupid that 2 months later they decided to put in a new sewage system, so they dug up the road. You know, there's a big hole down the road, you know. So that's not intelligent. It's the only thing that's just done to, you know, showing we're doing something both for us. But, you know, if there should be any elections every week, there might be something more things would get done. But it's unfortunately not the way it works. That's the problem when you're demon crazy. As Prabhupada called democracy. Get so many unsavory characters who are just, specifically in India, they're looting the country. Was it that recent scandal? How much? 1.76 lakh crores stolen. That's, I think I calculated, that was approximately $39 billion. How many geekers could you distribute for that? So that's, you know, that's just what we know about. That's only what we know about. The ones who are caught, the ones who are not caught, then that's a drop in the bucket. And in the other countries, they're more, I could say, here the person has to resign. You know, a little dishonor is there. If there's some corruption, or I heard of an unbelievable case about how, you know, the corrupt of the judicial system in India is. And a few years ago, there was an accident. It was that some young rich kid in a Beamer, drunk, ran over somebody and killed them. So it became a big celebrity case because, you know, rich person, kills. And so it became a big case. But then, what happened? It dragged on for 5 or 6 years. The last year, I think it was, they caught the defense attorney and the prosecuting attorney together trying to influence one of the witnesses to change his testimony in behalf of the defense. So now, if this had happened in North America or Western Europe, they both would have gone to jail. Both lawyers would have gone to jail and never ever be able to practice law again when they get out. And they're going to jail for a long time, especially the prosecuting attorney. What happened in India? The penalty was they're not allowed to practice law for 3 months. That was the punishment. Not allowed to practice law for 3 months. Whereas, I was reading in China, for this type of thing, they executed. One lady, she was having problems because from the upstairs flat, water was dripping into her apartment and it was creating a problem. So they went, knocked on the door, nobody came. Nobody was coming to the door. So they finally got the police to come and break the door down, open it up, find out what's going on, because water is leaking. When they opened the door, the flat was stacked high with money. It was a government official owned the flat, and he kept it. That's where he kept all his bribery, all the gift donations that were given to him.
If he would never have been caught, if he would have just turned off the water in his toilet. But when they caught it, they quickly, these cases don't go on for a long time, you know, like they're decided in a month. And then the person is executed. They give a 9mm bullet back of the head, and they send the bill for the cartridge to the person's family. And if he's healthy, then they also sell all his organs. Kidneys, eyes, heart, liver, is all sold off. So they don't mess around. That's why, you know, China is doing much better than India. They get rid of the corrupt officials. I mean, there's still corruption there, but it's significantly more problematic. You know, it's a lot more problem. If you get caught, they kill you, they execute you. Corruption is still there, but you think twice before you do something foolish. You think a lot because they're ruthless, and that's what it has to be. India would be a superpower if it wasn't for the corruption in India. You can see that Indians who leave this country, they prosper so well because of their gifts. They're highly gifted people, very intelligent. As long as you don't have to deal with all the bureaucracy, all the corruption, all the money you have to, black money you have to pay to get anything done, then they would be. We were in Trivandrum, trying to open a center in Trivandrum, just to get it. Of course, you don't have to worry about it these days. But a landline, that was the only one, he had landlines then. We have to pay a 2,000 rupee bribe to get a phone. So 2,000 rupees in 1982 would be like 12 or 15,000 rupees today to get a landline. Now you can just go buy a SIM, get a phone, everything is finished. But then just to get a telephone, they pay a bribe. Get a driver, they pay a bribe. Everything needed a bribe. Still you need that, but now. But so the kings would, you know, not allow this type of thing to happen. Kings, you know, Kshatriyas who were guided by Dharma, they would not allow these type of things to happen immediately. Not, you know, no long drawn out cases. You know, the judiciary. That's why to get around that now in India, they have this phenomena called what's it called now again? When the police, they have some long, you know, a very well known criminal. Oh, no, they call it a police encounter, right? The police encounter, which is established by the, you know, they know that the person is a criminal. Is, you know, there's no doubt about it in their mind. He's been caught in so many crimes, so they just. But the court system is so complicated that nothing ever happens, so they just pick him up, shoot him, and put a gun down beside him and say, there was an encounter. Everything's over. Finished. You know, one famous police officer, he's had 120 police encounters like that. But then even they become corrupted because the rival gangs will, you know, get him to bump off with somebody in the other gang. Like that. Or sometimes the government also, they get involved in these things to eliminate criminals. The government uses the criminals use the government. It's a messy business. In some governments, that was like in Russia, that was this WikiLeaks. You heard of this WikiLeaks that just came out? That the chief prosecutor of Spain said that he could not distinguish between government action and organized crime action in Russia, Belarus, and Chechnya, several in Ukraine. That he could not tell the difference between government sanctioned activities and organized crime. Who is controlling who? Government's controlling organized crime, or the other way around? Dealing with criminal states. That's the importance of having, you know, that's why Krishna wanted Yudhisthira to be the king, to be the emperor, not Duryodhana. Why Karna, the tragic hero, though he was involved in, apparently, you know, he was an enemy of the Pandavas, when Krishna, just about to leave Hastinapur after failing in his attempt to get the Kauravas and the Pandavas to come to an understanding, he took Karna aside. He took him on his chariot and he drove to a distance and he told Karna, actually, you were the eldest son. You were the older brother. You know, Kunti is your mother. You can be the king. You just feel like you be the king. And Karna said, yes, I know. I know I'm the oldest brother. But if I become the king, because I'm obligated to Duryodhan, I'll give him the kingdom. But Yudhisthira must be the king. Yudhisthira should be the king. So I cannot take the kingship. Yudhisthira should be the king. And then he asked, you know, then he apologized for his mistreatment of Draupadi. He felt humiliated that he had behaved in such a way with Draupadi. And he asked, you know, to convey the apology. And then Krishna and Karna embraced each other. But Karna knew Yudhisthira should be the king. He was willing to die. He knew he'd have to die so that Duryodhana could not become the king. So Yudhisthira should be the king. The importance of having, you know, when Kamsa became the king, what happened? All the Vaishnavas and Brahmas have to leave. They were living in the forest, living in the caves. They were devotees, they were Brahmins, but they're not in charge of the government. So what happens? You know, cow slaughter. They were killing cows. Why? Because then Vishnu's, you know, they thought that they could destroy Vishnu this way. So it's not a joke that they're having the government against you. This answer the devotees who were preaching in China or preaching in or former Soviet Union or trying to preach in places like Iran or North Africa or Muslim countries. It's the devotees in the Gulf, they don't want to preach to Muslims. They're afraid because what will happen, what the government will do. So we're thinking of different ways of doing that. You know, we're putting the Arabic and languages, you know, Prabhupada's books in foreign languages in Islamic countries and putting them on the internet, you know, so that people can get them that way. So since in India still there's some favorable attitude, you know, that we should take advantage of that and make it solidify that. Imagine if the, just think what would how much easier it would be to get things done if you had the, you know, if the commander-in-chief of the Indian army was a bhakta, you know, was a member of this kind of thing, you know, different people, they were devotees chanting 16 rounds, things would go nice, a lot better for us. But we can't even imagine what benefits we might get from that. Because we have a tendency to try to do things with our own logic. Which was demonstrated a couple of last year when we had come to the conclusion that we should do something, you know, regarding to the case. We did some special prayers, you know, to dealing with this case, and so, you know, trying to think, well, what could be done? What could happen? But nobody could even predict what happened. How Madhu Pandit, in an attempt to get rid of the judge, He tried to scandalize the judge, and the whole thing backfired and blew up in his face. Nobody could imagine that would have happened, but that's what happened. We can't understand, and by so doing, it poisoned the whole judiciary against Madhu Pandit. It's a problem that he's done this. It's not, they'll claim that they'll, the law will be carried out, but it's not in your best interest to insult the judiciary. That judge has got so many friends in the court system, and they're not going to take well to it. It was a bad idea on his part. Beneficial for us, not beneficial for him. But who would have thought that would have happened? So don't try to say, oh, what could happen? Then you have a tendency to psychologically undermine yourself by it won't happen. You know, why should I put the effort in? You just put the effort in. But Krishna determined the results. When they were living in the forest, the Pandavas, how many people were living in the forest? What is included in the Pandava entourage? There's actually 7 people in the Pandava entourage. No. The 5 Pandavas, Draupadi, and the head priest, Domya. Kunti was living in Hastinapur. So one time Draupadi was highly irritated. And she was chastising, speaking very sharply to Yudhisthira. It's like, what is the good of this dharma you're doing? Is he by following dharma, we're living in the forest? But Duryodhana, he didn't follow dharma, and he's living in the palace. And she went on and on this thing, and she's preaching in such a way. And then at the end, patiently listening to the whole thing, Yudhisthira, he cut her down to size, but didn't say anything sharply. He just said, well, you're speaking very eloquently, but this is all atheism. It's all atheism you're saying. He says, I don't follow dharma in order to achieve a goal. I follow dharma because dharma should be followed. That's what he means. That's why Krishna wanted him. That's selfless. But that's the meaning, selfless devotional service. He's doing it because it should be done. Not because he's going to gain something. Because it should be done. That is an end in itself. And then Draupadi said, well, I'm just irritated. And you're going to hear a lot more. She continued. But then he always corrected her. He corrected her. And then ultimately she revealed to Bhima that the real reason she was complaining so much was because she felt pain to see her husbands, who should be living like kings, having to live in such a way. So the real reason was because of the pain of seeing her husbands living this way. Not out of any selfish. And she's watching baby herself. Another item which is here mentioned here is about the various philosophies like Mimamsa and atheistic Sankhya. Now, until recently, I only because I knew of atheistic Sankhya, and I read in Vedanta Sutra how Vyasadeva he totally debunked atheistic Sankhya. But actually, and I thought that's it, that's like dead and gone. But actually, atheistic Sankhya is alive and well, very much alive and well, which is sort of an oxymoron because they believe that it's not life, it's just material elements. At this cosmological conference we went to last week, they had approximately 1/3 or more of the presenters based their presentation on Nastika Sankhya, which is of course very much in line with Darwinism, that Nastika Sankhya is simply that matter organizes itself. The life is a product of the organization of matter. That life comes from matter. It's totally in contradiction to the theistic Sankhya, which is that life comes from life. And then matter comes from life also. Everything comes from, they leave out the element of the supreme. One lady, she said that in her slideshow,
that the Purusha needs release. So in the question answer period, I ask, excuse me, what is this Purusha? Who needs to be released? What is that? You know, explain to me, what is this? You know, so she's saying ultimately that there's no God, and that there's no Param Purusha, no Mahapurusha. That is the somehow the from the combination of matters, the Purusha came, and then he needs to be released, like completely crazy. But that's only the beginning of a whole series of people who spoke this way. So that means there's a great need to distribute these books. Sankhya, because it's this atheistic Sankhya coincides with Darwinism. That's why Buddhism also become popular in the West. Because what is Buddhism? That everything is material manifestation, everything is a combination of material elements, and to achieve nirvana, we have to just take the material elements apart. No God, no soul. Quiet. They don't even talk about that. Then there's the mind, they have to be careful about that, and then you have to ask the question, like who's being illusioned and who's doing the illusioning? You know, they're tricky, try to avoid these things. But it all breaks down. But then if these books are kept in our go down, it's not going to help very much. We have to distribute these books to release people from this Maya. I think we're having a special at the end of toward the end of this week, and what's it going to be called?
Freedom
from Maya. Freedom from Maya campaign. And it was actually very pathetic to see these these are so-called academics who presented. Of course, there were some towards the end, some Sri Vaishnavas who presented proper Astika Sankhya Yoga. It was a relief in a desert. You have to go and wash your brains after that whole thing. I felt totally polluted after that whole thing, but there were some good parts, made some good connections, and people actually they appreciated. I just wanted to find out who were the people that were there, because I was sitting at the front, so a lot of young people were there, and I asked one, I thought she was a student, I asked her, what do you do? So I'm a lecturer in physics. I said, well, what do you think of this? She was okay, because there were some shaky speakers, They said, what did you think of Rasaraj's presentation? And she was very impressed. But that was the highlight, worth coming just for that, and just for his presentation. The other devotees, he was the first devotee to make a presentation. It actually made sense. Where you can bring God into the picture. But otherwise, there were these Jains who were there, no Buddhists, but they may as well have been Buddhists. So, we have to understand that there are many competing philosophies and worldviews, which, if you just read them, you'd think, who could accept this? But actually, a lot of people do accept this. They may not call themselves, Gnostic or Sankhyites, but they ultimately, by their worldview, they do accept this. Most most scientists, scientific establishment accepts this. They propagate it. And the individual scientists may not. They may believe in God, but they're not allowed to openly express their views. Because if they express their views, then if they want to write a paper, they won't be published. You only have credibility if you can publish in scientific journals, peer-reviewed journals. Only then you have any credibility. So there's a whole political process which controls who can publish. You want to get a grant? Well, you better be careful what your views are. Keep them to yourself, otherwise you may not get a grant. No research. So they suppress the whole political machinery. So though individual scientists, they may believe in God, the establishment is highly atheistic. highly atheistic. So there's nobody else who's going to do it, so we have to do it ourselves on behalf of Krishna. We can't depend on somebody else to do it. It's up to us to do this. So who's going to be I'm going to wind up this discussion now. Anybody have any questions or comments that they would like to make? Okay then.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.